From Johnstown to Philadelphia, Reading to Jeanette, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, State House Democrats have formally introduced Governor Josh Shapiro's deficit spending budget. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation for a Capitol Watch discussion. And the legacy news media is continuing its assault on Christians serving in public office. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Two vacant seats in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives were filled by special elections last week, but now there will be a new vacancy. State Representative Stephanie Scialaba of Butler County announced she will resign her seat effective March 31st. She was already not seeking re-election to the seat, saying serving in the legislature while raising a family had proven difficult, and while she enjoyed public service, her child was beginning school and she wanted to focus on family. No word yet on whether a special election will be held to fill the seat or whether it will remain open until filled during the November general election. A special election will be held in conjunction with the May primary to fill an open seat in York County. Both districts have been held by Republicans and lean heavily Republican. Josh Shapiro is simultaneously running for re-election and for the 2028 Democratic presidential nomination. Nationwide, he is mired near the bottom of polls, which show California Governor Gavin Newsom and former Vice President Kamala Harris as the front runners. According to a recent Emerson poll, Shapiro enjoys the highest net favorability rating among all voters compared to the other potential candidates. However, his net favorability among Democrat voters lags behind the others. That is important because only Democrat voters pick the Democrat presidential nominee. Targeting the affordability issue, State House Republicans have launched their Freedom Through Affordability initiative, which is, quote, a targeted effort to lower costs and push back against policies driving the cost of living increases across the Commonwealth, end quote. The initiative was announced during a news conference held by House Republican Policy Chairman David Rowe. The soon-to-be-defunct Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reports Next Era Energy and Exelon Corp. are planning to build an, quote, extra-high-voltage transmission superhighway across 10 counties in southwestern and central Pennsylvania. The new transmission line is intended in large part to meet projected electricity demands for data centers in the eastern half of the state. The line would enable the importation of power into Pennsylvania from plants in Ohio, Illinois, and other states. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. State House Democrats have officially proposed a 2026-27 state budget that spends more than $5 billion more than expected revenue. It is dead on arrival in the state Senate. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation have a Capitol Watch update. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me today in the studio, my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, and I'm glad to be here with you, David.
It's great to be together. Our friend and other regular Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association couldn't be with us today, so you and I will do the heavy lift ourselves. So the listeners who've been following the program, they've heard us talk about, since the governor's budget address, and certainly going well before that, talking about the Commonwealth's fiscal condition, talking about the budgetary challenges that Harrisburg faces, and then, of course, the development this year with the governor wanting to spend even more. And so just for a baseline, Steve, let's go back. Last year's budget spent all of the reserves. There's nothing left.
The legislative cupboards, reserves.
Yes, correct. There's the cupboards are bare, and that was to take state spending up to about $50 billion, a little bit over. Actual revenues that came in to the Commonwealth, about $46 billion. And so in February, that Governor Shapiro called for spending in the new budget of $53 billion. So we didn't increase the revenue to the Commonwealth. I mean, the governor put a couple of things in there that he says will bring in money. We can talk about that. But I don't know. Is it just me, or when you're in a hole, you should stop digging?
Well, that's exactly the problem. It seems like the response of the administration has been keep digging.
Right.
And they've been almost brazen about it at times, suggesting more revenue from certain potential revenue sources this cycle than last cycle. For example, the legalized marijuana idea, one that the governor has to enhance revenue,
mm-hmm.
and there was no bill that was likely to pass last session
right.
to make selling marijuana legal in Pennsylvania for recreational
right.
purposes. Now this year, they've decided that they can raise even more than they raised last year, and so they put a higher number with that revenue source. And they've documented various different revenue sources, and some of them were coming up goose eggs last cycle, and again, in real life, will, but somehow in the budgetary math, they won't. And because they're not there, you have this important problem that we call a structural deficit.
Right, right.
And the structural deficit means that in simple terms, the spending is far outpacing the revenue.
Right. So the increase in mandatory spending on social programs, and these are promises that the Commonwealth has made, in particular to our senior citizens, that because Pennsylvania's population is older and that cohort of older folks is growing, those are folks beyond their working years, people who are no longer earning income, paying taxes, people who themselves often require taxpayer-funded services. At the same time, Pennsylvania doesn't have enough of the younger folks who are still building their careers in that working period where they're paying taxes. And so we don't have enough income to pay for state government at its current scale. And so I would think that a responsible decision makers would be focused on, okay, where can we pare back? How can we get more out of the dollars that are already being spent? And what can we do to encourage the economy to grow? It seems like those topics really haven't been at the top of the conversation.
Yeah, and that one is very important, the whole demographics situation that our state faces, which feeds into the economic long-term economic crisis we have. And so when you ignore those things, they do come back to bite you. And so you can't just move on and act like it's okay that the revenue didn't come in last year or this year. You see that, for example, in Pennsylvania, our independent fiscal office has obviously their job. There's their nonpartisan state organization that's job is to understand, count the money
mm-hmm.
and the revenues and all those sorts of things with all the most sophisticated tools. And they've determined that there's a budgetary structural deficit in the neighborhood of $6 billion.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be paid somehow. As you mentioned, the reserves are gone.
Right.
There are a few targets out there of other areas that there's money saved, but it's primarily in the area of our state's rainy day fund.
Right, which is the emergency fund.
Emergency for economic disasters and those sorts of scenarios, which we're not in yet, thankfully.
Well, yeah, but the trajectory that we're on, that if we would spend $53 billion when we only have maybe $47 billion coming in, and we take that out of the rainy day fund, that not only have we've done a couple of bad things at once. We've expanded the spending baseline, which of course then is the amount that everybody else expects for the following year. So that makes the shortfall bigger. We have also depleted the emergency reserves, which leaves the Commonwealth less secure if something bad really happens. And then beyond that, because we've taken the reserves down so low that the Commonwealth's bond rating would drop, which would then make borrowing more expensive, which would also increase, again, obligations on the Commonwealth. It's like buying your groceries with a credit card. Like you're going to hit the wall.
And interestingly, in the legislative chamber this week, the House of Representatives, which is controlled by a slim Democratic majority, enacted a new higher minimum wage They voted to enact it. Would have to now go over to the state Senate and ultimately to the governor for his signature. But just the idea that if you look at the revenue calculations, part of the increased revenue that the governor is claiming in this budget proposal is that more money will come into the state's coffers because the minimum wage has been raised, which therefore means that certain workers are earning a little bit more money, and that's going to generate enough tax revenue to actually improve the budget. So magically, you can spend money essentially as if it's going to somehow lift us out of poverty.
Right.
But is that going to work? I don't think so.
No, because the conceit is that everyone will get paid at the higher rate, failing to recognize that raising the mandated wage rate doesn't give employers any more money to pay people with. And so as a result, you have workers in those entry-level jobs. You have hiring is delayed for sure, if not just like frozen. The hours for existing workers are reduced, and probably some positions are eliminated. So yeah, the rate might go up, but it's not going to go in your pocket because your hours are going to get cut or your position's going to go away.
And that's just the absurdity of some of the manners and concepts of how we can improve our financial situation as enacted at least or passed by a majority in the democratically controlled House. We in Pennsylvania, we have a state Senate, which has got a margin of majority for the Republicans.
Yeah.
And they've been standing firm against a lot of bad ideas over the last cycle. And they're going to be in a position to have to do that again because, again, the Democratic House is illustrating, demonstrating that it's willing to do all sorts of things that aren't fiscally responsible and yet somehow claim to be improving our economic conditions.
Yeah, this is not the right conversation to be having because it's, I guess at a certain level, it's just dishonest. But there was something else that happened recently that I wanted to mention in this context, Steve, which is that it was at the Pennsylvania Press Club that's held in here in Harrisburg, and that the speaker was the leader of the Hospital and Health System Association of Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. HAP. And the leader was talking about the hurt that many of our rural and smaller town hospitals are experiencing and talking about how that directly affects quality of life in that community. If healthcare services aren't available, how that is a negative trend that then feeds on itself, where it becomes more difficult for businesses to hire new people to come into that area because folks won't want to go because the services aren't available. And talking about this as an after effect of communities that have lost their factories. And of course, this goes straight to me as an advocate for manufacturing. It mm-hmm. isn't just the money that's made by a manufacturing business. It's about wages and benefits and the quality of life for our employees, because manufacturing adds the most value. We have the best wages and benefits for our employees. And so you're talking about families sustaining jobs. You're also talking about our manufacturers being significant local taxpayers, upholding the local tax base and the quality of municipal services, that this is why we have to fight for our manufacturing jobs to maintain the quality of life in our communities. Because when things start going bad, it, you know, as I mentioned, it kind of feeds on itself.
It was kind of sad to hear some of the stories that the president of HAP was discussing at the press club event. And, you know, you look at places that they're losing their most qualified doctors, mm-hmm. nurses, other medical specialists,
mm-hmm.
because they are obviously in high economic demand and they can command good benefits and good salaries and pleasant working conditions if they wish to. And many of them do. They're looking for the place that's good for them and their family to live in and to practice medicine or whatever they're practicing in their particular profession. And we're losing those people from rural Pennsylvania. And it's tearing apart the fabric of the community. If you, for example, she described the absence of prenatal care and actual
OBGYN
birth care.
And delivering babies.
So there aren't doctors there to do that.
Yep.
And they have to drive some 70 miles sometimes to get to the nearest doctor.
Right.
Where there's any obstetric services.
Yep. So for mothers who are in labor.
And so that's not just a thing that happens around pregnancy. That's just one example.
Of course.
So a lot of our areas are losing their specialists, their most qualified medical folk who love their community, but they have to do what's best for them and their families.
Right.
And if we're setting up a system that punishes them somehow for coming to Pennsylvania and they can do better economically in Ohio or North Carolina or Florida or Texas, like anyone else, they will go to where they can make the biggest difference, but also they're seeking a quality life of life.
And I want to take this back a couple of steps back to the budget, because this to the listeners, this may kind of sound like rambling, but these are all very closely related. I would argue that one of the main problems that we have in Pennsylvania is that Harrisburg spends money faster than people can earn it. And this has been a problem that we have had here in the Commonwealth for years and years, decades and decades, governors and legislatures of both parties. And that when government spends money faster than the private sector can create it, it suffocates growth. And this is why Pennsylvania, year after year, only ever grows, our economy only ever grows at some fraction of the national average. And, you know, Steve, just as you were saying, people go where the opportunities are. And so if the opportunities are more plentiful and more promising somewhere else, that's where people go. You see that happening right now with Florida, with the major changes that have been made there. The economy is booming, and that's where people go. And it's not just the weather. People are leaving California. People are leaving Hawaii. The weather's really nice there too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about the decisions that get made at the level of state government on how are we going to be stewards of the taxpayers' dollars? What are we going to do to build a pro-growth environment where private sector investment will choose to come? Because all these decisions are voluntary. And so, again, the chronic overspending causes a structural problem with slower growth, which then leads to fewer folks staying and more people leaving. And that is what drives our demographic crisis, which has now left us where we are with the structural deficit because of more older folks beyond their working years and too few younger folks to carry the freight. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation.
And so if we sort of take a step back and think about all this, it comes down to specifics, things that aren't that exciting to talk about.
Right.
It comes down to recognizing that we have an outflow of people from Pennsylvania that has been driven by a demographic cycle that many generations now of Pennsylvania politicians and leaders have kind of ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Every 10 years when the decennial census is completed and the new congressional districts are drawn, every time we lose one. In our lifetimes, every time we've been losing a new representative. And so some other state just got more political clout and we got less, which means the piece of the federal government pie that our citizens are relying on is getting smaller.
Yeah, we become less relevant to the larger national conversation.
And so we've got to wake up to that, and it's been documented, and there's been all sorts of surveys done and polling done. People really do move away because of taxes or move mm-hmm. to a place with lower taxes.
Mm-hmm.
They appreciate that. They appreciate places where laws and regulations are reasonable and not onerous. And they move to places where that becomes prominent. We've seen this brain drain here in Pennsylvania now, as I said, for at least a half a century.
Right.
Probably more than that. I don't know how far it goes back, but
well, at least to the Second World War. At least to the 1950s.
So probably six or seven cycles.
Right.
And it's almost as if we're ignoring it.
And this is why, again, you would want to accentuate the positive. Everybody would like to believe that things are okay. I wish I could say honestly that they are okay. There are plenty of positive opportunities. Pennsylvania retains some really significant strengths when it comes to our geography, our access to market, our amazing natural resources, our infrastructure, our institutions of finance, and our institutions of higher learning. Like, all of those things are really amazing. But because we have not had a leadership class that has made a pro-growth, pro-production agenda the top priority, they're more concerned about taking than making, that this is how, by degrees, we have fallen behind. And again, this is what makes me, I don't know what the other word is, like, it makes me angry when you see the governor putting forward a budget that is going to burn through the rainy day fund so that our emergency funds are depleted, that it's going to tank our bond rating, and it's going to set us up for really significant tax increases on everybody. It's not just going to fall on high earners or business or whoever. Like, this is where you have to tax everybody.
The spending level we're talking about with the structural deficit we have is going to mean, within the very short time, within several legislative cycles, drastic increases in spending, which is going to force families to pay ultimately much higher taxes to fill that gap. And we're talking about, for an average family of four, something on the order of $2,000, $2,100 per year per family of four.
Every year from now on.
Because of the decisions that are about to be implemented by this budget, if in fact the legislature doesn't kind of wake up and engage in the battle on behalf of the folks they represent.
And Governor Shapiro has his well-oiled, taxpayer-funded PR machine, and he's kind of a Pied Piper that everybody thinks well of him and he gets stuff done, so he says. But that reputation, that aura, does not track with the facts on the ground. And again, I just, even though it will probably not be terribly popular or sexy, holding the line on fiscal responsibility is what is called for at this moment. And I hope enough of our leaders will hold the line and stand up for that and make the case and say, no, we can't have it all right here, right now. So much more to say, but we're out of time. Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and your organization and the work that you do?
They can visit commonwealthfoundation.org on the internet.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. And from Steve and me, thanks to all of you for listening. We will catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
The Associated Press, which has completely abandoned any pretense of journalistic objectivity, recently produced a hit piece on Secretary of War Pete Hegseth. His transgression? Publicly professing his Christian faith. It is important to understand that the legacy news media has become blatantly anti-Christian. It defends radical Islam, but tolerates, even excuses, anti-Semitism, and portrays Christians as a threat to democracy. Keeping in mind, anything departing from left-wing ideology is a threat to democracy. The theme of the AP article is that Secretary Hegseth's frequent invocation of his Christian faith and values somehow impact the current military operation against Iran. This is ominous, according to the article, because Iran is an Islamic theocracy, thus implying that the offensive against Iran is something of a holy war. This, of course, is not true. The Trump administration has been crystal clear from day one about the reasons for and the goals of the military action: destruction of Iran's capacity to build nuclear weapons, elimination of its ability to threaten neighboring states with offensive weapons, and creation of a climate in which Iranians can bring about regime change. AP posits that Hegseth's Christian faith and public utterances thereof has come under, quote, renewed scrutiny because of the current military action. However, the renewed scrutiny has come from Associated Press itself, which reached out to several anti-Christian left-wing groups for comment. The author of the article even admitted that the AP could not verify some of the claims made in those comments, but saw fit to include them in the piece anyhow. Were the Associated Press practicing actual journalism, the assertions of those groups would have been balanced by quotes from those who understand that action against Iran is not an assault on Islam, but neutering of a brutal regime that has killed hundreds of Americans, suborned terrorism throughout the region, and as recently as last week hung in the public square a teenage wrestler who did not toe the party line. None of this should be surprising. The American left, of which Associated Press and the rapidly declining legacy news media are part, has been engaged in an all-out assault on Christians and Jews for decades. The reason is straight out of the communist playbook: replace the worship of God with the worship of the state. Since Christian values are antithetical to the policy goals of the left, it seeks to erase Christian influence from public policy. Thus, they frequently wield the phrase separation of church and state against any public official who dares to bring religion into the public square. The Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution demands no such separation. The clause is not a separation clause, rather it is an establishment clause. The government is prohibited from establishing a state religion such as that which existed in England during the time of the Constitution's framing. In fact, the amendment provides for just the opposite, saying government cannot prohibit the free expression thereof. To the dismay of the left, Christians have refused to leave the rhetorical playing field, nor stop allowing biblical values to influence public policy. Such values played an important role in the nation's founding and have guided policy throughout the ensuing generations. A friend of mine recently posed the question on Facebook, "Is America a Christian nation?" My response was, "Yes, America is a Christian nation that welcomes and supports the inherent rights of all religions." Members of the Trump administration, from Vice President Vance on down, have been more outspoken about their religious values than previous high-profile officials. That is reflective of the center-right coalition of voters that put President Donald Trump into office. The left derides this as Christian nationalism. But for the vast majority of Americans, both faith and patriotism are central to their identity. The legacy news media has been sliding toward extinction for some time now. From the recent decision by CBS News to shutter its iconic radio network, to staff reductions at the Washington Post and other major newspapers, to the pending closure of Pittsburgh's Post-Gazette, the legacy media is operating on an economic business model that no longer works. That most, if not all of those platforms have abandoned impartial journalism to become de facto house organs of the left has only hastened their demise by alienating readers who just want old-fashioned unbiased reporting. The recent hit piece on Secretary Hegseth and his faith is emblematic of the left's bias. Associated Press should be careful lest it follow CBS Radio into the dustbin of history. With the Town Hall Commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. The 2026 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is coming up in less than 2 weeks. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the premier grassroots activist event of the year. This year's Pennsylvania Leadership Conference will be held April 9th through 11th at the Penn-Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. This year's featured dinner speaker will be Chris Ruddy, the founder and CEO of the Newsmax Cable Television Network. Washington Examiner columnist and Fox News contributor Joe Concha will be the conference luncheon speaker. They will be joined by a wide array of speakers, panel presentations, and an expanded menu of workshops. Complete information and registration for the 2026 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is now available at paleadershipconference.org. Join us for the conservative event of the year, the 2026 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. Again, registration is available at paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Frederick W. Anton III Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.